If you would, take out your Bibles and open up to Ephesians chapter 6. We're going to start in verse 4 in a moment. Tonight, as we talk about how love is not provoked, we need to deal with something first before we really expand upon it. So many times we talk about that to know God is to know love, and to know love is to know God. It's kind of hard for us to reconcile in our minds the thought that love is not provoked. Because you can read some 44 times in the Old Testament where God was provoked to wrath. If we don't take some time to really think through it and to look at what the Hebrew word's talking about, we can start to believe that there's a mighty contradiction. But there's not. Within the Hebrew word of being provoked, it's not the same as the kind of provoking that we're going to talk about tonight. When it talks about God being provoked to anger, it's not that he's emotionally swinging. It's kind of like if you were sitting at a nuclear plant and you've got certain readings that come up. If it hits 70%, then you start to get concerned. If it hits 85%, it's time to have a change in action and realize if it hits the 95%, then it's time to run. Here's God. He says, you know what? He's not provoked in the sense of all of a sudden he says, we're just going to emotionally swing and now I'm angry. He says, you know what? Your unrighteousness has raised you up to this level, so now I'm going to have to deal with you on that level. That's what it means in the Old Testament by provoking him to wrath. It's not that all of a sudden he gets this whim and says, well, now you made me angry. Now I'm going to have to take out my wrath on you. It's here's God who says, you know what? Whenever you move into certain ungodly and evil ways, now I have to discipline you in this way. So that's what it's talking about whenever it comes through the Old Testament. And it says, God being provoked to anger. 80% of the times where that word provoke shows up, it's about God being provoked to anger. And if you ever go back through and read just a couple of them, you see that the children of Israel are not responding in a righteous way. So that's a little idea, little different idea when you're talking about in the Hebrew, in the Old Covenant, where it brings up about provoked. Now, in the New Testament, whenever you come to 1 Corinthians 13, and it says that love is not provoked, we're talking about you're not emotionally unstable. So many times we get down, we have a rough day, and one person says one little thing, and we're hypersensitive, and boom, there it goes. Man, we're just jumping all over somebody. Have they done anything to us? No, nothing really. It's just we're so sensitive about it that we kind of jump out, and we lash out at them. This is the kind of provoked that we don't need to have. Another way of saying about this kind of provoked, not touchy. It's not easily irritated. You know, it's something, if you've ever been out shoveling or raking, remember as a kid we got a big yard and we always had to rake up leaves, and you would start to rake and rake and rake, and you know, you only did it, you know, for a couple weeks out of every year. And so, but during that time, boy, you'd get a blister that would build up, and boy, you were hypersensitive. All of a sudden, you go inside, and whenever you go to wash your hands, it hurts. That thing opens up, and boy, is it hypersensitive. Even the little things that wouldn't have bothered you before, now to just barely touch it, oh, man, it just rubs you the wrong way. It makes you want to not do that ever again. Sometimes people get the same way. Little things happen, and they've rubbed you the wrong way, and you're hypersensitive about them. You say, you know what? Love doesn't work like that. It's not that kind of situation. So to realize, sometimes we use the thought of, boy, whenever you're around this certain individual, you got to be real careful with what you say. Because they're mighty touchy. They're real sensitive about something. We need to take a look in the mirror and go, is there anything that we're really that sensitive about? And if we are, why? We need to be people who can't be provoked. And the idea of provoking here is to draw you out to do something that's wrong. Now, the Greek word that this word is built off of has a root, and it's the same idea as what you see today in marketing and commercials. You know, whenever it's interesting to me, maybe these are just the commercials I pay attention to, but have you ever noticed whenever on TV they're doing advertising for trucks? It's always about how manly it is and how much it'll haul and all the power that goes with it and how many foot-pounds of torque it's got in the engine. They go through all that stuff. Is that for no reason? What are they trying to evoke in those men? Well, if you buy this truck, you're tough. You know, this truck is the one that has the most power. They're trying to draw you out. They're marketing it right to you. You know, it's interesting. I thought about this today. You go into Staples. It's called the, you know, hit the easy button. They even have it translated into other languages now. Hit the easy button. You know, what does that do? You know, there's no difference between buying something at Staples as opposed to buying it somewhere else. It's the same item. But yet they're trying to market you. Say, you know what, it's easier if you come over here. It's all marketing. They're trying to provoke you to where you come and seek them out. That's the provoking. That's what we're talking about. He says, you know what? Love's not provoked like that. It's not provoked at all. Another illustration for you. You ever notice that milk's always in the back of the store? Why is that the case? Because they know you're going to need some milk, and so you're going to have to walk all the way to the back and see everything else in front of you, hoping that there'll be an impulse. Here's something else for you. Next time you go out to buy milk, stand where that freezer is and look out about 20 feet. And I just about guarantee you, you're going to see some form of cookie. Because they know, if you got milk, you're going to want something to go with it. They know that. You know, it's funny. Whenever we talk about marketing and commercials, we think, oh, that's just normal. That's the way everybody does it. But here's the thing. What if people start to use that in an evil way? What if they start to come to it and all of a sudden you're not talking about buying cookies and milk, you're talking about trying to draw somebody out to do something that's evil and wrong? All of a sudden you're starting to light up desires in other people. Now you've come into evil. Now, love's not provoked. Now, if you want to see the opposite, love's patient. It's going to continue to do what's right. Because whenever you get provoked, you can go from wanting to do what's right to all of a sudden at the wrong time, you're hypersensitive, and now you jump over and you do something wrong. See, that's the provoked. Love says, I'm going to do what's right, and you can't provoke me to do it any other way. It's a mindset. It's a mindset with love and with godly traits. Now, looking over to Ephesians chapter 6, I want you to notice what it says here about fathers. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4. It says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. He says, fathers, you have to be aware of this. You have to know. Your children are going to be children. There are going to be times when they do things that you roll your eyes and you think, how did that child ever think that was going to turn out okay? It will upset you. It will make you wonder where you went wrong. Sometimes it'll upset you to the point that you just want to make your child as angry as you are. That's why he wrote Ephesians 6:4. He says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. He says, you have to be careful. You have to be the parent in this thing. God never deals. Here's the parallel of God dealing with his children the same way fathers are to deal with theirs. God never just all of a sudden says, I'm emotionally unstable today. It's time to destroy you. He says, it's because of where you've gotten, where you've decayed away to spiritually, that I have to respond to save your soul and hoping that you'll turn. Because if you notice here, he says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath. Notice what else it says, children to anger. It says, but bringing them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. You don't respond out of anger. You respond how God wants it to be dealt with. You respond to teach them something. not how to provoke somebody. You teach them, look, here's the instruction of the Lord of how to deal with what you went through. That's what that child needs. They're just a child. They're not an adult yet. So to take time with them and show them, here's the instruction and the discipline of the Lord. Here's how you make it. Here's how you endure. It's real easy. Boy, whenever you get real sensitive on things, you've had a rough day, you come home, child's done something really stupid, and you go, man, you know, and then all of a sudden you hear about it and you just want to go ballistic on them. He says, it's time for you to learn how to love. It's time for you not to be provoked, because love's not provoked. Now, tonight we're going to spend some more time, and we're going to look at the life of Christ and to see how often he's provoked. Look over at Matthew chapter 16, what was read just a few minutes ago. Because whenever it says love's not provoked, it doesn't mean you won't have opportunities to be provoked. It means you don't respond off of that. Matthew chapter 16, look at verse 21. It says, from that time Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised up on the third day. He starts to explain it to his disciples. Notice he's not talking to the unbelievers. He's talking to his own people. He says, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to go up to Jerusalem. I'm going to be persecuted. I'm going to be killed. And on the third day, I'm going to raise. He's telling a matter of fact. Jesus already has his mindset. Here's where I'm going, and here's what's going to happen. Look at the next verse, verse 22. Peter took him aside. Notice he doesn't do it in front of all the other disciples. He takes him off to the side. He says, and began to rebuke him, saying, God forbid it, Lord, this shall never happen to you. Think about this. This is the same person that back in verse 16 said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And now Jesus tells him what's going to happen, and he says, oh, you're wrong. He doesn't just tell him, I think you got it wrong. It says he rebuked him. That kind of sends chills up my spine to think of ever going up to Jesus and telling him that he's wrong. But that's what he does. He says, forbid that any of that should ever happen. Boy, I'm glad Peter was wrong. Because if it wouldn't have happened, where does that leave us? Now, look at what the problem is. Look at the next verse. Verse 23. But he turned and said to Peter. Notice he turns around. He was looking the other way. He turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. Notice, Jesus doesn't just do it with a whim. He says, but he turned. He turns away from Peter and he says, get behind me. Guess where Peter is right now? He's behind him already. Look at what the point is, though. He says, get behind me, Satan. You're a stumbling block to me, for you are not setting your mind on God's interests, but man's. He says, your mind sets off. Jesus says, you can't provoke me to do something other than what's right. There's a time in the garden where Jesus prays to the Father. He says, take this cup from me. Boy, I bet he probably even thought about these things that Peter had said. But he knew, you know what? Know what he says to God after that? Not my will. I'm not going to be provoked to take it in a different direction. But your will be done. See, too many times we get hypersensitive about things, and we can easily be provoked because we're not working off of love anymore. We're working off of self-interests instead of what God desires. Peter's responding off of what he wants. You know what? If you have the Almighty God there in your presence and he's teaching and he's doing miracles and has all these parables, you would sure want him to stay around for a long time, especially if you're one of his top 12. Because you have your own interest in this deal. You're not looking out for love. You're looking out for your own interests. Notice the next thing that Jesus says to him, verse 24. Then Jesus said to his disciples, remember, Peter's still behind him. He turns and says to the rest, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. You can't have your own interest in heart and ever expect to not be provoked. Because people who are self-centered are provoked all the time. It's just like hitting the button over and over and over and over again. He says, the first way to not be provoked, he says, you have to deny yourself. He says, you have to come after me, and you have to deny self. You've got to give up your own interests. Remember this agape love? It's a self-sacrificing love. You see it really shine through right here. He says, sometimes old self's going to want to take over and do what it wants. And he says, you've got to, number one, be able to see it, and number two, to turn away from it. He says, you're going to have to follow me. If you notice, at the beginning of 24, he says, if anyone wishes to come after me, the first thing, to deny yourself, take up your cross, whatever burdens you bear, and follow me. It's interesting. You have to do two things before you can follow and before you can come after him. Too many times people say, well, I'll follow and then I'll decide whether I'm going to deny myself or not. That'll be a person that gets provoked all the time. Failure's already set in of doing what's right. Let's look at some more illustrations in the life of Christ. We'll just see how many we can get in before time runs out. Look back at Matthew chapter 4. It's a story where the Spirit of God leads Jesus out into the wilderness. And if you look at verses 3 and 4, Jesus had fasted for 40 days and 40 nights. He became hungry. Verse 3. It says, and the tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread. See how the tempter works? He provokes him. He says, you know, if you are the Son of God, then you'll turn these stones into bread. Jesus is hungry. There's no two ways about it. Think of going 40 days without food? Boy, we go about 6 or 8 hours and we start to wonder if we're ever going to live to see another day. Here's Jesus. See him trying to provoke him? If you're the Son of God, you ever had somebody tell you, you know what, if you really loved me, you would, and then they tell you something ungodly? They're trying to provoke you. They're trying to do it over and over. It's called manipulation. We can't be people to manipulate other people. That's not love. Love is long-suffering or kind. It doesn't seek its own. It says, hey, if you're the Son of God, I want you to note, he's going to say that to him again. Jesus never even addresses it. We're people who a lot of times, we want people to know whenever we're right. I think about this sometimes whenever I'm driving at night. I got the low beams on, and somebody's coming up to you, and at the last moment, they flash those lights on the high beam because they want you to know you're wrong. You left them on. That's somebody who wants to be made known, I'm right. I have to think about that every time because I want to flash them back. But it doesn't matter. Why do I want to let them know that they were wrong? Am I not willing to be patient? Am I going to let them provoke me to do the same thing to them? It's what they've done to me. That doesn't amount to much. Just talking about headlights. But you see the simplicity of the illustrations. It's there. Sometimes we're people who we don't even recognize we're being provoked because we just think, well, that's natural. It is. That's what scares us. What if we don't recognize evil? Here Jesus is being provoked. He recognizes it. Look at verse 4. And he answered and said, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. You notice he's not concerned at all whether the tempter knows that he's the Son of God. His faithfulness will prove that. If you look down at verse 8, It says, again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these things I will give you if you fall down and worship me. He's trying to provoke him. He said, take the easy way out. I can give it to you. He's just provoking. Here's Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, go, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only. You're not going to provoke me. You see, Jesus, he's got a mindset on holiness and righteousness and truth. He says, you can't provoke me, no matter whether you're telling me about food or whether you say you're going to give me all the kingdoms of the world. Little piddly things or great big humongous things. So many times we think we've won because we can't be provoked for little things, but we give over in the big. You know what? If we're not faithful in the small, we won't be faithful in the great. Let me show you some more. Look over at Matthew chapter 27. Matthew chapter 27, look at verses 27 through 31. You see people trying to provoke Jesus over and over and over again. And I want you to notice, he doesn't get hypersensitive to it because he's working off of love. Look at verse 27. It says, then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole Roman cohort around him. Notice all of them are there. Verse 28. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him. And after twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on his head and a reed in his right hand, and they knelt down before him and mocked him, saying, hail, King of the Jews. They spat on him and took the reed and began to beat him on the head. After they had mocked him, they took the scarlet robe off him and put his own garments back on him and led him away to crucify him. They're just mocking him. Open mocking. Boy. If you ever go out to a playground and you see one young kid start to make fun of another, what's about to happen? One of those children's about to be provoked. I think about that a lot of times. You ever seen someone around a small animal and they just gig that thing until it's going to do something really bad? That's provoking. Here they are, they're taking God in the flesh. Spitting on him, beating him with rods, had his robe ripped off of him. Boy, talk about being provoked. You notice something through those verses? Jesus doesn't speak. He's not going to be provoked. He says, I don't care how you treat me, I'm still going to love you. And I'm still going to continue on. Patience. Now, look down at verses 39 and 40. It says, and those passing by were hurling abuse at him, wagging their heads, and saying, you who are going to destroy the temple and rebuild it in 3 days, save yourself. If you are the Son of God, come down from the cross. Have we heard that, if you're the Son of God, part before? Wonder who they're feeding off of. The tempter, Satan. They have all these things to say. You know, if you really are the Son of God, come on down from the cross. Jesus won't be provoked. He just continues. If you notice, he still hadn't said anything to him. He doesn't even address it. Too many times we try and justify ourselves when we've been provoked. You know what the loving thing to do is? Just keep on going. To keep on loving. They say, you know what? Save yourself if you really are him. He says, no, I'm centered on love. I'm centered on saving you. Look on down a little further. Look at verse 41. In the same way, the chief priests also, along with the scribes and elders, were mocking him and saying, he saved others. He cannot save himself. He is the King of Israel. Let him now come down from the cross, and we will believe in him. Hey, you do something great, we'll even believe in you. Well, if somebody came up to us and said that, they said, you know what, if you'll just do this for me, I'll believe. But we might easily be provoked. Not Jesus. Look at the next verse. Verse 43. Look at what they say. I think of how piercing this must have been. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now, if he delights in him. For he said, I am the Son of God. To know that the Father was so delighted in his Son at this time that it's beyond words. And then to hear them twist it and to say, if God really delighted in you, you wouldn't have to endure this. They don't see truth. They don't see righteousness. They don't see holiness. They're just trying to provoke Jesus over and over and over again. And all you see him work off of is a mindset of love. It's definitely not a feel-good. If he's working off a feel-good, it doesn't get to this point. It's a mindset. He says, I will not be provoked to do what's wrong. You will not be able to move me off of it. I'm not even going to justify myself to you. There are other times where he gets hit by other things. John 19 talks about his own mother being there. To think, I don't know where Joseph was. But Jesus says to John, take care of her. Not in those exact words, but he says, behold my mother. It says that John took her from that day forward. It might have been easy to be provoked. Who's going to take care of my mother? The same woman that brought him into the world. He won't be provoked with that either. I also think about, as he continues on, even in Luke 23, before he's on the cross, I was about he goes before Herod. Herod's so glad to see him. You talk about if there was ever a person where he could have talked his way out of going to the cross, well, he could have surely talked his way with Herod and made it out. He doesn't even venture to say a word to Herod. He says, I'm not going to be provoked. You can't talk me out of it. Peter tried to talk him out of it first. He got rebuked. And you see the same feelings all the way through. He says, you know what? Someone who's trying to be provoked, they look at the person and say, you know what? I see that you have wrong intent against me, but I'm not going to justify myself. The Lord will justify me, and he'll take care of me in the same way that he took care of Jesus. I pray that's us. I pray that we're people who are stubbornly mindset on love. And no one can provoke us away from it, even whenever they rub us raw time and time and time and time again, that our mind will stay set and that we won't be provoked to do evil. If there's anyone here tonight, if we can be of any aid, will you come?